Morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. It's August 17th, 2021. First finance hearing in this special session. I'm joined today by Co-Chair Bishop, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Olson, Senator Wilson, myself, of course, in person, Stedman. Online should be Senator Wilikowski and Senator Hoffman. And I don't know if we have the television up today in here with them. Okay, we don't. Okay, so we'll have to try to, handle that as we move forward if the members of the committee don't have the ability here to watch their colleagues that are not here in the committee as we get into questions. But we have one item on the agenda today. We're going to have an update on the fiscal summary. On the enacted budget, and we'll go over the items that were added in the budget that were vetoed by the governor, did not end up in the enacted budget. So we have asked the Director of Legislative Finance, the nonpartisan financial arm of the legislature, the Director, Alexi Painter, to put this presentation together and come forward and start laying out the current fiscal position of the state so we can use this as a basis for moving forward in other discussions that will encompass several financial areas over the next several months. So with that, Mr. Painter, if you can come forward, jump in the hot seat, and take us through your presentation. We'll use a standard format where Mr. Painter will go through his slide and then we'll stop for questions. And we'll work through it. Just for those watching the meeting, I expect this meeting will last somewhere around an hour, 45 minutes to an hour. There's 11, 12 slides. It's not too long or too detailed. It's pretty high level. We're working on a couple other presentations that we may roll out later on over the next several days, possibly, that will have a more detail in some of these areas. So this is a good foundation. That, Mr. Painter, if you could take it away, please, after you introduce yourself.
For the record, Alexi Painter, Director of the Legislative Finance Division. And so we'll start out with a short fiscal summary of the enacted budget for FY21 and 22. That's post-vetoes. A couple of things to bring your attention to. First, in line 7, agency operations, you can see that there was a reduction from FY21 to 22 of a bit over $100 million. That actually does not include, or it includes, the impact of Senate Bill 55, which transferred funding from the statewide items to agency operations for retirement. That has the effect of, in multi-year comparisons, making it appear that agency operations are higher than in past years, and agency operations lower. So really, if we didn't have SB 55 in there, the difference would be another $72 million or so. So it would be more like $180 million reduction in agency operations. But then the statewide items would be a bit flatter. It would actually be a slight increase. And note on line 8, those statewide items do not include items that had been funded in the conference committee budget directly from the Constitutional Budget Reserve that were not funded when that vote was not agreed to. So most notably, that's $114 million of oil and gas tax credits, as well as over $40 million of school debt reimbursement. So that both of those are not reflected there because that CBR vote did not pass, so that funding was not there. The capital budget, you can see there is an increase, even with supplementals, over a $100 million increase. A good portion of that increase came from the statutory budget reserve. About $75 million of funds for the capital budget came from there. And that fund source is in question whether there's funds there or not. Another notable line would be line 13, the permanent fund. You can see that post-veto, there's $8.5 million left. That $8.5 million is essentially enough to pay the PFD division's costs. It's not enough to actually pay out a dividend or to pay hold harmless or the PFD criminal amounts, or the restorative justice, I think is what we call it now, that also were funded through that appropriation. So That 8.5 just covers what's needed for the PFD division itself. On line 16, you can see the pre-transfer surplus is $220.6 million. So after the vetoes, we actually have a surplus even before fund transfers. Those fund transfers include $250 million of revenue replacement from the American Rescue Plan, and then $80 million from the statutory budget reserve. So after all those fund transfers, we actually have a post-transfer surplus right now of $536.6 million estimated for FY22.
We have questions on this slide, members? Senator Von Imhoff.
So, thank you. So just to confirm that the enacted budget of FY22 includes the lack of the reverse sweep funds going back on the bottom, the vetoes, and the CBR vote not being passed either. Is that correct?
Senator Von Imhoff, that's correct. I would note that with the reverse sweep, those funds remain in the budget. So, for example, the statutory budget reserve, that regardless of whether it's sweepable or not, the funds are in the budget. And so that 239.8 shows that it's there regardless of whether we get a reverse sweep or not. On the other hand, the CBR direct items, because of the way those are funded in the budget, if the three-quarter vote is not adopted, those actually are removed from the bill. The reverse sweep items, it's not quite that direct.
Can I follow up?
Follow up, yes.
So of those reverse sweep items, other than the PCE fund that was just allocated or just decided with the Superior Court, are those things like the WAMI program and the student performance scholarships, are those being funded or not?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, so those items, most of them are not, well, I should back up. There's a couple of funds that there are no funds available at all without the reverse sweep, so higher ed would be the most notable. And so for that fund, those items are not funded. There are other items where the sweepable balance is only a portion of what's needed to fund the item. So for those, there may be a shortfall in a program, but there may still be some revenue available, so there's sort of a partial shortfall. But WAMI would be an example where there's no funding available.
Follow up? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Painter, as you look at the same issue that's there, what hope can we give the students that are out there, especially the medical students who are trying to, those new ones that are coming on that are trying to find a way to fund the expensive medical education that stands in front of them? What kind of hope can we give them, with short of a reverse or a three-quarter vote being taken by the legislature?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I think line 18 is some hope that we do have a surplus right now, so the legislature with a simple majority could fund all of those items out of the general fund. We would not need a three-quarter vote to have up to $536 million of general fund appropriations.
Can I follow up, Mr. Chairman? Yes. With that observation, in your years of experience in ledge finance, not necessarily as a director, but watching it happen, what's the likelihood that that's going to go on?
I missed the end of that question.
What's the likelihood that the line 18 will be drawn on to go ahead and give some type of financial security to those students that are trying to further their education? I might note for the betterment of the rest of the state of Alaska.
Sounds like a political question, though.
Well, I mean, if it is, I'm just saying, in your past experience, how likely is that going to happen?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I can't really speculate on the politics of it. I would just note that there's not a appropriation bill on the call of this special
session. For those watching at home, Mr. Painter, could you explain the special session and the how it takes or how a special session is structured that we don't have the ability we have in a normal legislative session to put forward appropriation bills or any other bill we want to?
Mr. Chairman, in a special session, the legislature is limited to the items on the call that, in this case, the call was made by the governor for the special session, so we can only deal with the items that the governor put on the call, and an appropriations bill is not one of those items. And so in this special session, unless the governor amends the call, there would not be a way to address these items.
Okay. And then in the event that we had that ability, we'd have to go through the normal political process between the two bodies and have a signature by the governor to have it enacted. We have other questions on the budget summary. So in essence, you're telling the committee that we have $536 million in appropriatable cash sitting there? Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct based on the spring forecasts. And I would note that recent oil prices have been higher than the spring forecast, so the amount may even be a bit higher than that.
Okay. And I know this is early in your presentation, but later on in your presentation, are you going to walk through what the enacted budget would be in the event that the funds are swept and not swept, correct?
Mr. Chairman, the next two slides will compare fund balances with and without the sweep. The actual UGF appropriations, which are depicted in this slide, would not change, but the fund balances behind them, which we'll see in the next few slides, would.
Okay. Do we have any questions for members online? Senator Wilkowski, Senator Hoffman.
I don't have any questions.
Okay. Go ahead and continue.
Okay, so continuing on to slide three, this shows the projected FY22 fund balances with a reverse sweep vote, assuming that that's agreed to. So a few things I would note is the Constitutional Budget Reserve. We anticipate that the fiscal year 21, assuming a reverse sweep, would end with $415.7 million in the CBR. And then that you can see that post-transfer surplus going back in, so we'd end up with $1 billion at the end of the year. The reason that CBR balance may seem low is because of the structure of the budget that drew an estimated $410 million into the statutory budget reserve. So that amount would fund $80.7 million of appropriations because the governor vetoed $330 million of statutory budget reserve appropriations. And the designated funds, this is not all designated funds. These are just a few of the larger ones that we track closely. So the most significant balances are in the Power Cost Equalization Fund and the Higher Education Investment Fund, combined about $1.5
billion. We have questions on this slide, the one with the reverse sweep. And again, for those watching at home, the reverse sweep sounds like fancy language, but all it's basically doing is reconstituting beginning of the year balances from the ending fiscal year that just ended the end of June. So under the current structure, the beginning balances will be zero for most of the accounts, and we're going to go through those in a little bit. But that just, so I just don't want people to get confused over the language we use here. It's just a way to reconstitute the beginning of year balance. Senator Olson and Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for explaining that to the public. You might also, one of the big questions I've had as I've been out there, why was the reverse sweep put in place? If you could explain that to the public so that in layman's terms so they can understand that as well. I think people would appreciate that as to why it is in place at the end of the fiscal year.
Mr. Painter, could you explain the constitutional implications of owing a debt to the CBR?
Senator Olson, through the chair, sure. So in the constitutional amendment that created the Constitutional Budget Reserve, there's a section that says that when funds are drawn from the reserve, that creates a debt from the general fund to the CBR. Excuse me. And then there's a repayment mechanism, which is that the unobligated balance of the general fund and subfunds thereof are swept, as we call it, to the CBR at the end of the year, as long as there's a liability. If there's no liability, those funds stay in place. And so it's been past practice of the legislature to reverse that sweep for subfunds, not for the general fund itself. So, you know, typically if we have deficit borrowing and or a surplus at the end of the year, that amount will just go back to the CBR, but the subfunds themselves are reconstituted with this reverse sweep. That requires a three-quarter vote because it's an appropriation from the CBR, which generally requires a three-quarter vote. Generally, the legislature has agreed to that reverse sweep eventually, although we've had a couple of years where it's been delayed. I think this is the third year where we haven't gotten it in a timely manner.
And just for added information for those watching at home, when we get the budget from the governor on December 15th, they have always, Office of Management Budget, have always gone through all those accounts and tried to identify which ones that can be trimmed. And then when the committee here starts their budgetary process, we in turn go through all the accounts to see how much money funds that we could trim to move back to the general fund for operations of the state or mainly the capital budget in any given year. And we try to move forward minimum account balances for the beginning account balances. So they're not, I just don't want the public to get the idea that the account balances are just massive sums of liquidity. The administration, no matter who it is sitting in the on the third floor, goes through the same process, and we do it year after year after year. So if there was excess cash in these accounts, they would have been identified years ago and trimmed. Go ahead and continue, please.
So
wait, we got Senator Wilson. He had a question. And
yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Painter, can you talk about the recent court case and how that may impact some of these selected designated funds, such as Community Assistance Fund, since that is sort of funded from the PCE?
Senator Wilson, through the chair, I'll caveat by saying I'm not an attorney, so I can't really give legal interpretations. So the Community Assistance Fund itself is not sweepable because it goes out without further appropriation. The rest of these funds on the list here are typically considered sweepable, although now the power cost equalization is no longer sweepable. The administration at this point, the court order just changed the PCE fund. Any other funds could be reclassified based on the decision, but that's up to the administration to do in the absence of a court order. So I would assume that they would review those funds and see which ones still are sweepable in light of the court decision and which are not. But I'm not sure if they have made any conclusions at this point about which may or may not be sweepable. But of these funds, that could impact the statutory budget reserve and the Alaska Housing Capital Corporation most notably.
So just a little bit added information on this one also. Over the years, when there's been review of and or discussion of what is sweepable and what is not, OMB has worked with legislative finance and our auditors, and we try to come up with a list so both branches of government agree on what it is, so we're all working off the same sheet of music, so to speak. So I would expect that we would follow that process going forward also after the administration does their review. And we have Ledge Legal working on that legal opinion from the courts as we speak. And we may be bringing more information to the committee in the next few days on that subject. Senator Wilson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess that was my follow-up, was asking if the if Ledge Finance is working with OMB or with the administration to do a relook at some of these funds to see if the administration will change any of their determination on sweepable funds and non-sweepable funds.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I have not discussed this with the administration. Legislative finance and legislative legal have discussed it, and potentially for what our interpretation may be of that legal opinion or that court decision, but I have not had conversations with the administration.
It's early yet, I think, also.
Yeah, it's been less than a week, so.
Yes. Other questions on slide number 3? Senator Welikowski, do you have any questions on slide number 3?
No, thank you.
Okay, go on to slide 4, please.
So slide number 4 shows the projected fund balances without the reverse sweep, so where we stand now. And so a few significant differences here, and the beginning balance of the constitutional budget reserve significantly higher. About $900 million of funds would sweep to that. And again, this is based on just moving PCE, not any other potential changes as a result of the court order. So most notably, the statutory budget reserve, the capital income fund, and the higher education investment fund of the ones here would have no balance because it would be in the CBR. And so that creates some negatives here where there's these negative 80.7, and that's the kind of hole in statutory budget reserve appropriations if that's not, if there's no sweep. Same with capital income fund and the higher education investment fund, where there would be appropriations out, insufficient funds available to meet those appropriations. And the capital income fund here is a good example of what I was saying earlier about a fund where there is an ongoing source of revenue, which is earnings of the permanent fund, or of the Amerada Hess sub-account of the permanent fund would go in. However, the appropriations out were relying on a fund balance, so there would be a shortfall between the appropriations out and the projected revenue in.
So can you take that a little deeper? I mean, do these people get rubber checks, or is there movement internally? Do we do internal borrowing? Do we not send out the checks? What's the mechanics of this? Because you can't have negative money.
Mr. Chairman, generally the administration will restrict funds that are not available. So, for example, the items from the Higher Education Investment Fund, those funds are not going out, so we don't actually create a negative. But those items in the budget are not funded, and so the administration would not release the funds if there's not funds available and would avoid a hole. So that means the scholarships, for example, are not being paid out from that fund and WAMI and so forth. For the capital income fund, that mainly funds deferred maintenance projects, so I would assume that the administration will plan the amount of deferred maintenance to fund around the projected revenue rather than including the fund balance, and would not begin work on the projects funded with the SBR in the absence of funds available.
So then to fix this negative balance, we could either do it through a supplemental request in January or an appropriation bill in January?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. In the absence of a reverse sweep, we could change the fund source to general funds, and that would make the funds available.
Okay. Senator von Imhoff.
So just to be clear, that the governor originally had the reverse sweep funds and programs on his original budget back in December, as well as carried through all through session. And I believe his administration sat at the end of this table advocating for these programs to be funded. And now they're not. And he didn't include them in this call. I just thought it was odd.
Yeah, that it is. Any other questions on slide number 4? Senator Wilikowski, slide number 4.
I have no questions.
Okay. Slide number 5.
Mr. Chairman, now we're changing topics somewhat to do a summary of the governor's vetoes. And so we put them in 6 different categories to try to simplify, because there's over $1 billion of vetoes. So the first category is the vetoes of legislative additions, where the legislature added funds beyond the governor's budget or beyond last year's budget. That includes over $57 million UGF, about $64 million of all funds. Excuse me. There's also another category of partial vetoes of legislative additions, where the governor vetoed a portion of a legislative addition, but not the entire thing. There's also vetoes to match governor's proposed reductions, where the governor had proposed in his budget a reduction below the previous year's budget. The legislature did not agree to it. The governor then vetoed down to the number in his budget. There's a number of items that the legislature funded, but with a different fund source than the governor proposed, and the governor then vetoed the funding. So it was, these items were funded in the governor's budget, but with a different fund source, so he vetoed those. Then the other category we'll get to, that mainly in that amount is the PFD. And then finally, capital projects, which kind of fit into all of these different categories, but we'll go through a little more individually as we go through.
Okay. Any questions?
I'll just summarize that in all, in UGF, there's nearly $900 million of vetoes, all funds about $1.1 billion.
Do we have questions on this before we go into more detail? Senator Von Imhoff and then Senator Bishop.
So how does it work to veto federal funds? It just, I mean, that's a, how do we, is are federal funds treated normally as general funds then?
You can't receive the federal funds.
We just won't receive.
Have to go to LBNA and get authority to receive federal funds if there's a related appropriation in the operating budget or capital budget.
So can we just talk about that just for a second?
Yes.
So we have $220 million, Mr. Painter, in federal funds under capital projects. That's $220 million in capital projects that this state could really use to kickstart the economy, create high-paying jobs, year-round high-paying jobs with benefits, and yet we're denying this federal funding for what?
Senator Von Imhoff, through the chair, if I could wait until we get to that slide on capital projects, we could cover what those are. They're specifically allocations within federal highway funding of federal money where the governor vetoed funding for projects acceleration and contingency. So there's still enough federal authority for the whole projects, but it reduces the flexibility that the department has in applying that funding. And we can discuss that in a bit greater depth when we get to that slide, if that's okay.
One last comment. So reducing the flexibility in an environment of rising inflation, supply chain shortages, worker shortages, and increase of costs of various different materials. Short-sighted, in my opinion. Thank you.
Senator Bishop, then I'll go to Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Alexei, Mr. Painter, back to your third bullet. Could you reiterate that again, what you said?
Senator Bishop, through the chair, the vetoes to match the governor's proposed reductions. So these are items where the governor had proposed a budget reduction below last year in his budget. The legislature did not agree to that reduction, either in whole or in part, and then the governor vetoed down to the number in his original budget. So the biggest example would be Medicaid, where the governor proposed a $35 million reduction. The legislature agreed to half of that. The governor then vetoed to his original number.
So would that also follow up, Mr. Chairman? So that would that also include the legislature not accepting the AHFC bonds for he was using bond money to replace UGF? Is that some of the same category under here?
Senator Bishop, through the chair. So in the capital budget, a lot of those items are items the legislature funded with general funds, but had been proposed by the governor as part of a general obligation bond. We didn't break down the capital budget in the same categories just because there's not as many vetoes, but most of the governor's vetoes of UGF are kind of in that category where of the veto of a funding source different than proposed by the governor, where it was the governor's proposed project, but he was using a GO bond and we used general funds and he vetoed the project.
So one more follow-up, Mr. Chairman. My point is, this committee, and I could be a little off here, but we were trying to keep the truth in budgeting and unwind the governor's proposed budget. And I just want to know if I'm on the right track here, because it's showing a reduction, but to the public, this could theoretically come back as an addition in the following year to GF.
Is that a question or a comment?
It's just an editorial. So.
Well, we certainly could have a supplemental in the Health and Human Services budget.
Yeah.
You know, the public has some rights for services. They go take care of the services, and we get the bill, regardless of what's in the budget. So we got to always keep an eye on that. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On that point, which I wasn't my original question, but on that point, are we still able to go ahead and get federal funds, even though they've been put together in a supplemental budget, and that as time has passed for us to, with that time, that the deadline passed, so that we're not eligible to get them?
Through the Chair, Senator Olson, so we still do have the access to the LBNA process for some of these funds. We did limit its ability to use flexible federal funds or for the potentially forthcoming infrastructure bill from the federal government. That can't go through the LBNA process, but that would be an avenue, or an additional appropriation bill would be another avenue.
Thank you. Go to my original question. Has to do with the federal funds that we are probably going to be losing, realizing we got $220 million up there. I guess, have you broken them down into what portions of the state that are going to be affected, or what departments are going to be affected? And I think the main concern I have is that in my district, we've got three major airport hubs up there: Barrow, Kotzebue, Nome, and airport funding is very important to keep those airports maintained. I wonder, have you broken it down to see how much money we're not going to be getting if those projects are not able to accept the $220 million?
Senator Olson, through the chair, the $220 million is specifically funding for highway projects that was designated for contingencies or project acceleration. It wasn't designated to any particular project. Mm-hmm. There's still enough total federal receipt authority to receive our full allotment of highway funds. But with those vetoes, the department will have a lot less flexibility in how they apply it. So if there are overruns in one area, there may be a lot less ability to move funds around. But there shouldn't be any necessarily reduction in how much we're able to receive in total federal.
My real question has to do, Mr. Chairman, if I can continue, has to do with how are the airports affected by this in particular?
Through the Chair, Senator Olson, the airports were not affected by the vetoes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee on this page?
Just an editorial comment. Okay. But your roads getting to your airports are affected. And that's my concern with this contingency language being eliminated. You could have projects slip and be pushed back a year or 2 years. And the airports are great, but you've got to have a road to get to the airport.
Senator Wilikowski, do you have a question on slide 5?
No questions.
Okay, we'll go on to slide 6.
Mr. Chairman, slide 6 shows the vetoes of legislative additions, and we define legislative additions as items that were an increase over the funding in the previous year's budget, so in FY21. So the first few here are vetoes of additional funding provided for public broadcasting. The governor's vetoed that funding numerous times, and the legislature has added it each year.
Just stop there for a second. Sure. Just for clarity, we have the enacted budget last year, and we have the governor's submitted budget. So this change is off of what, the submitted budget or the enacted budget of last year?
Mr. Chairman, these are based on the enacted budget the previous year, okay, rather than the governor's budget. So the first three, about $2.7 million for public broadcasting. Next is $2.5 million for pre-kindergarten grants. Skip, the next few are a little smaller. The $3.5 million here links up to the $3.5 million of Fed down below, where that's actually the disproportionate share hospital funding that the governor vetoed. The governor also had a couple of different vetoes in frontline social workers, where the legislature was attempting to add funding there, and same with nursing. The governor vetoed $379.7 million UGF plus some federal funds in the commissioner's office. That was to provide additional personnel for the Health and Social Services commissioner's office. This was actually a governor's request in FY21 that the legislature did not fund in that year. Legislature then did fund it in FY22, but it was vetoed. And then a couple of smaller ones, and going down the larger ones down at the bottom, transportation, that is funding for the central maintenance station, fund capitalization is the Community Assistance Fund. The top one, $17.6 million, is the UGF portion of the FY22 deposit into the fund. And then the next one is the FY21 supplemental deposit of the fund into the fund. That supplemental deposit would have brought the fund balance to $90 million at the end of FY21 and allowed for a full $30 million distribution in FY22. With that veto, that FY22 distribution was reduced. And then with the veto of the $17.6 million, that would affect the FY23 distribution from that fund and would essentially leave enough to pay the base payments of about $19.5 million, but not enough for any per capita payments.
We have a question on this one. Senator Von Imhoff.
So I just find it interesting that with the health and social services, with all the behavioral treatment and recovery grants, with the pandemic and the mental health issues that the state of Alaska has, I'm just curious if the governor and his administration fully grasps the challenge that we're having right now with our Alaskan citizens and not having access to timely behavioral health treatment facilities, and all the efforts that the Mental Health Trust has done to try to combat that with the Crisis Recovery Center, among other things, and the governor just seems to be whacking all of this. I am disappointed, to say the least. I also think that the community assistance funds, which are so incredibly important for our deferred maintenance and our capital projects, and the short-sightedness of this administration is really astounding. And not really having a forward-thinking mentality beyond a year or so. And I think that as stewards of the funds, we should have not only a two-year forward-thinking, but a two-decade and a two-generation forward-thinking. That's how I look at it.
Other questions on slide 6? Senator Wilikowski, slide 6.
No questions.
Okay. We'll go on to slide 7.
So slide 7, there's only three items. These are the partial vetoes of legislative additions. And since these are a little more complicated, I'll address each one. So the first is the governor vetoed half of the funding for a named recipient grant to the native village of Napaimut for the Akuskokwim Ice Road. The legislature had added $370,000, the governor vetoed half of that. The governor vetoed $3 million of funding for the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. The legislature had added $10 million of coronavirus state and local fiscal relief funds, so a federal fund source that we had some flexibility on to that organization. The governor vetoed $3 million, leaving $7 million. And then with the Marine Highway, this is the complicated one. So the numbers here reflect just the one-year equivalent, so just the calendar year 22 funding. The legislature also moved to an 18-month funding system that would put the Marine Highway on a calendar year funding going forward. So this $25.3 million increase is not to the entire system because we added a whole 6 months, but just what the legislature added for calendar year 22 versus what was in fiscal year 21. The governor vetoed $8.5 million of that. That still left an increase of about $16.8 million above the FY21 level, and that's into calendar year 22 rather than on the fiscal year basis. And also on fund sources, the funding, the $25.3 million is essentially all funds. Because of using federal money in place of general funds, it gets very complicated if I try to break it down more in one slide, but essentially to the Marine Highway, you know, there's the federal funds and UGF are interchangeable, so the veto was all UGF, but some of the increase in funding was actually from federal funding.
Any questions on slide 7? Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Painter, the $3 million for those federal funds that we're getting through the part of the coronavirus relief fund, what happens to that fund, that funding? Do we just lose that $3 million, or does that carry over to the following year since we have 3 years to expend this? What happens?
Senator Wilson, through the chair, so we have through, I believe, December of 2024, or maybe 2023, I can't remember off the top of my head, to spend those funds. So that $3 million will be available next year. We have another $500 million or so because we only spent half of what we expect from the state and local fiscal relief fund. So that'll just add to that amount. And so there needs to be an appropriation for that. Those funds aren't just available for the administration to spend elsewhere. We would just add them to next year's bucket.
So we'll, Senator Wilson, in January, we'll have ledge finance break out any funds that came in to the American Recovery Act that we appropriated this year that was vetoed or what have you. We'll have that in a separate column, what have you, plus the 500 that we're going, $500 million that we're going to appropriate next year. So we'll have, you know, a clear tracking of it. And then for those watching at home, there's some restrictions on some of those monies, and other monies can be converted into just general funds. So we'll be working through that process over several meetings here next, this coming January, February, or February, March, probably. And we have set up fund codes, ledge finance set up fund codes, so we can track this, these funds. Took a little extra work and time this last winter, but it'll pay off, I think, with our ability to track this process. Senator Wilikowski, questions on slide 7?
No questions.
Okay, slide number 8.
Mr. Chairman, slide number 8 covers the vetoes to match the governor's proposed reductions. So these are reductions compared to the fiscal year 21 budget, or compared to a statutory amount in the case of the REA fund. So the most of these are relatively small, where the legislature did not accept a reduction that the governor proposed. For example, in spill prevention and response, the governor proposed reducing $462,000 and to try to preserve that fund balance. The legislature did not agree to that reduction, but then the governor vetoed his number. So most of these are small, impacting a position or so, and are, I don't really have a whole lot to say about most of them. Just the two large ones at the bottom are $17.5 million for Medicaid. So again, as I said before, the legislature agreed to about half of the governor's reduction, proposed reduction, and then the governor vetoed another $17.5 million to get to his original number, which was a $35 million reduction to Medicaid. And then on the REA school fund, the legislature funded that at the statutory level. The governor then vetoed half of that funding, so that represents 50% funding for that fund.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So, Mr. Painter, I do recall that there was a $10 million veto for tourism this year. Was that reflected in here or on one of your previous pages?
I believe that was a capital item, Senator Von Imhoff, so we'll cover it when we get to that.
It's in the capital?
Yes.
Okay, I'd like to talk about it when we get there. All right, thank you.
And I think just as a heads up for the committee on the Medicaid 17.5, I think the reason, as I recall, the subcommittee recommended the number they did is because they felt that the reduction wasn't going to materialize. So we'll see if we have a supplemental, and if the subcommittee is more on point than the administration on what that potential outcome is going to be. So time will tell. But the subcommittee took a conservative approach trying to avoid supplementals.
That is correct, yes. Mr. Chairman. And because the Medicaid is, a lot of it is beyond our control and depends on federal match, federal guidelines. And with the COVID pandemic, the federal guidelines were changing and pushing forward maturity or dates of when it was going to change or cease to exist anymore. And it just kept on changing, and it was just really hard to pin it down. So yes, you're correct. We were taking a conservative approach.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Painter, as you look at the last line item down there at $17.1 million, you're dealing with the REA school fund. Can you just give us in perspective what that has, what kind of numbers are we talking about in the overall scheme? Is that a significant amount? Because that's one of the things that I've heard from my constituents, that the REA school fund has, if it's significantly whacked, it tends to go ahead and have a very negative effect down the line for their operations.
And when you, before you answer his question, kind of explain what the REA school fund is and its link to the standard education formula, the BSA.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I'll take a stab at that second one first and then get to Senator Olson's question. So the REAA fund is for the regional educational attendance areas to use for their cost of school construction and major maintenance. Those areas are unorganized, part of the unorganized borough, so they don't have local tax bases that could be used for school major maintenance or school construction. And so the state funds it through this fund. The Department of Education ranks projects from these communities and then applies the funds to the top scoring projects. That statutory amount is determined as a percentage of the amount of school debt reimbursement that goes to urban districts. And so typically, governors who have vetoed this in the past have vetoed those two in equal proportions. In this case, a portion of the school debt reimbursement was funded with the CBR in the legislature's budget. When that CBR vote was not passed, we actually ended up under 50%. The governor still only vetoed down to 50% of funding. However, in FY21, the governor had vetoed all funding for the REAA fund. So combined, I think, you know, it's a larger impact than just a one-time veto. And the governor in FY20 had vetoed half of the funding for that as well. So over the 3 years, essentially 1 year's worth of funding has gone into that fund to go to school districts for school construction and major maintenance.
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman. It's very concerning that this governor has been doing that to rural schools.
Any other questions on page 8? Senator Wilikowski.
No questions.
Okay. Her daughter must have tired you out taking her to school, because I haven't heard a question from you yet today. Page number 9.
So, Mr. Chairman, number 9 is our other category that didn't really fit into any of the above ones. So the first is legislator per diem. The governor vetoed about $2 million of per diem for you all. The governor also vetoed $662 million for the permanent fund dividend. That brings down to just that $8.5 million for the PFD division, but no funds to actually pay a dividend. Those funds had come from a mix of the general fund, $340 million, and then the SBR, the remaining $320 million. The final item is the governor vetoed public school trust funds to Treasury, to DOR for management fees. The reason behind that is that actually during the legislative process, very late, we realized that in the governor's budget and in the legislature's budget, we had misinterpreted the statute on the public school trust fund. That fund has a POMV draw out of it, and the limit applies to both the management fees and the amount that actually go to the public school purpose, which it funds a portion of the education formula. And the management fees had been counted separately. So the full POMV draw went to the education formula, and then the management fees were an additional draw that exceeded the POMV draw and thus violated the statute. So the governor vetoed the management fees, leaving just the 5% POMV going into the education formula. However, this does create a hole in the Treasury's budget, and we would expect a supplemental appropriation of general funds to Treasury to make that up. And hopefully we will correctly interpret the statute going forward and won't have to make ad hoc adjustments in the future.
Well, errors do happen. We got a lot of complexities in this budget process, so we understand that and recognize that when they are picked up, we go back and correct the issue. So we'll we will take up the supplemental in January, February, and deal with it. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you look at line item one, Mr. Painter, the legislators per diem, realizing that there are three branches of government, were any of the other two branches affected, mainly the administration, was their per diem cut as well?
Senator Olson, through the chair, not to my knowledge.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Von Imhoff.
So just to build upon that, with what Senator Olson said, the executive branch does receive per diem when various employees fly back and forth between Juneau and Anchorage and other locations. Is that correct?
Senator Von Imhoff, through the chair, that's my understanding, yes. But I think it's a bit different than how the legislative per diem works in that you can elect different methods, but...
Correct, but
yes.
They're not living in Juneau. They're just traveling back and forth. But that veto, or that those funds were not vetoed.
That's correct.
The governor also gets per diem.
Does he?
Yes, he does. And we can have those documents pulled for the committee, so we can see where the flow of funds are. But yes, Senator Bishop.
Yes, on the per diem, I've got a couple questions.
Sure.
Mr. Painter, has in your tenure with the state government and your historical knowledge under your tutelage of some of your former ledge directors, have you ever seen an administration cut the legislature's per diem?
Senator Bishop, through the chair, I do not recall that happening in the past.
Have you ever seen the legislature cut the administration's per diem?
Senator Bishop, no, I do not recall that.
Third line of questioning, just a comment to Senator Von Imhoff's question. Staff for the administration does get per diem. There's two facets. Depending upon where their base is, depends upon what their rate is. So if we wanted to see what that was for the administration, we could get that, but there's two different rates.
Hey, if Ledge Finance could put that together for the committee, the base of the per diems, it's Anchorage, Juneau, or wherever it is, and we'll take a look at that. But clearly, this veto is punitive against the legislature because the governor was not getting the political support out of the legislature he wanted for his agenda. Clearly his constitutional amendments. And then to call us into special session and being vetoing per diem is a little over the top. So I think the other body, when they do the base operating budget before they send it to us, I'm sure they're going to take a very acute view of this particular area. And those watching at home, regardless of philosophical disagreements with any given governor or administration, the administration, the executive branch, has their budget, and we give them their budget that the governor wants, if we agree with the governor or not. And the legislature does their budget, and we put that together, and the courts do their budget. And a couple of years ago, under the first year of the current administration, the other body modified that arrangement, and the OMB director came to my office wanting that to be fixed because of the arrangement that we don't intercede with each other's budget regardless of our differences, philosophical or political differences. And clearly the first year of this governor's term, there were substantial differences in the interpretation and how we wanted to deal with the budgets. And this committee fixed it. And we fast forward 2 years and we see this petty political game being played. It doesn't build a working relationship, and it serves no purpose but to make a soundbite to the press that you vetoed per diem on what was classified as a defective budget and or unproductive legislature. And I can assure the public that the budget was not defective. What was defective is the interpretation of the administration on the retroactive effective dates, different from any other previous governor since statehood. So that budget that this committee adopted was balanced with or without the reverse sweep and allowed the administration to operate the state in a timely and efficient manner going forward. So there was no defectiveness in the budget. It was just pure politics being played. So we'll have to have that discussion this year as we go forward if we're going to have delayed effective dates put in the budget. We have until June 30th to put the budget on the governor's desk. We put the delayed effective dates in there to ensure that the core services of the state go forward and the state operates regardless of the particular voting on accessing some of the funds. So that's been a standard procedure. And we intentionally went through the budget very carefully to ensure that if the reverse sweep did not take place, which was highly likely at the time, that it would not impact the citizens across the state, and that we would keep that within the legislature and the administration and work out the political differences as we move forward. So it becomes rather problematic. We gave the governor everything he asked for, including a litany of capital projects that he was bringing in several every week, and my co-chair will go over that here in a little bit, I'm sure. The legislature did not add one capital item to the budget. We didn't add anything. We gave him his budget. I think we need to reconsider that political position as we go forward and see what kind of document we put forward and if we're going to have delayed effective dates in it or not, and what we're going to add or not add, or if we're even going to start with his budget. We can start from scratch with our own budget on day one and set his budget aside. So we'll have those discussions and we'll see how they go. We will put a budget out on time, and it appears right now that we can do that with a vote of 21 and 11, a simple majority vote, to ensure that the state can operate on July 1, regardless of dysfunctionality out of the administration. And we'll move forward and deal with that. So we have any other comments or questions on the first line item before we... Senator Wilson.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have a question on the first line item and the second one. The first one is, what's the year and time that veto takes effect?
Senator Wilson, through the chair, so that's for fiscal year 22. Traditionally, that amount is roughly equal to the amount needed for a 120-day session for the per diem for the 57 legislators who are eligible for it. So the effect would be that funding wouldn't be available. Typically, special session per diem is paid from a different fund source, although currently the budget structure kind of lumps them together. So it's kind of a management decision for the legislature about how to deal with that reduction, but it'd be this current fiscal year.
And just for a little political clarity, this committee had the ability to exercise that budget well before 121 days, and even before 90. We started on day two of the 121-day constitutional limit, with the intent of being done well in advance of 90 days because of the virus issue. We were held up politically by supporters in the minority in the House, in conjunction, I think, with the administration, and made it impossible for us to move forward and get a budget out and get out early. So we had two special sessions in dealing with the budget, waiting to get it funded. So to imply that the legislature as a whole dilly-daddled and burned the clock is just political pandering. So I would expect that the committee here will take a rather aggressive attitude and time frame next winter to also get our budget done as early as possible, because we'll wait and see what the pandemic issue is. And we will do what we can, and I think the way the numbers look now, we'll be able to avoid the deliberate delay and the deliberate train wreck taking us into the summer for political purposes and get out of here with a budget on time and a balanced budget. So we'll see how that all plays out. But it was not this committee in any way, shape, or form that slowed down the process. We were calendared to be done sometime at the very first part of April when we started. Yeah. Senator Wilson.
No further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Wilson.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My second question has to do with the line two here, the permanent fund dividend. Obviously, that we don't have a bill in front of us or the mechanism to do that without us, all 40 of us, calling ourselves back into a special session right now. Mr. Painter, what's the time frame for us to decide on an amount to meet the normal historic payment deadline in October? When does the legislature need to make that, or best guesstimate of when that needs to happen?
Senator Wilson, through the chair, what we've heard from the Department of Revenue in the past is that they need about a month. So in order to pay out at the beginning of October, they would need to have an appropriation amount by the very beginning of September. And I think beyond then, likely the payment would be delayed.
About 2 weeks.
Right, correct.
Okay. We have other questions on page 9. We have any questions from Senator Wilikowski?
No questions.
Okay, we're on to page 10.
Chairman, so page 10 is the capital project vetoes, and the first one is the item that Senator Von Imhoff mentioned before, $10 million to the Alaska Travel Industry Association. That was coming from the statutory budget reserve. Most of the rest of these items, as we go through, were originally part of the governor's general obligation bond package. So the major maintenance grant fund for school major maintenance, that was in the general obligation bond. The Mount Edgecombe High School repairs was also in the same place. The next few items from the mental health budget, these fall into the different fund sources category, where the governor had proposed to use the mental health trust reserves, which are, you know, the essentially savings account of the mental health trust. The legislature instead used the general fund mental health, and the governor vetoed that funding. So that's the next three items that are labeled MH. The Alaska Vocational Technical Center upgrades, again, was a general obligation bond project. Same with the Fairbanks to Seward multi-use recreational trail construction, $13.2 million. That was in the general obligation bond. Going down to the revenue item, $1.5 million. Again, this was a fund source difference where the governor proposed using mental health trust reserve funds, the legislature fund with UGF, and it was vetoed. Craig Harbor, $4.4 million. I believe that was also general obligation bonds. This is a partial veto for Municipal Harbor Facility Grant Fund. The governor did not veto the entire thing, but left enough for, I believe, the top-ranked project, but not the others. The next two items are the federal funds that we discussed a little bit more. And so these are, again, specific to the highways, and it's the contingency and project acceleration allocations. The governor did a partial veto of the contingency, or I believe full of contingency and partial of project acceleration. The idea behind these allocations, so to give some context on this, until a few years ago, the legislature allocated each project in the Department of Transportation's capital budget, so there would be an allocation for each potential project they wanted to do. Then a number of years ago, in order to simplify administration, the legislature started just providing a blanket appropriation of a fixed amount to cover all of the potential projects. This year, the committee wanted to go back to the prior method of allocating projects. But to address some of the concerns with the prior method, adopted this a slightly different structure. So in the prior version, in order to create the sort of flexibility the department needed for administration, each project was essentially a bit overfunded. So there was this contingency built into each project's budget, and more projects would be funded each year than there was actually funding available for, with the idea that if, you know, some projects aren't able to go, you'd go down the list. That created a lot of confusion because legislators would see this project got funded because it was in the budget, but in actuality, there was not funding available for it because it was down the list and was just there in case other projects ran into delays. And the inflated budgets often created confusion about what the true cost of projects was. So to avoid that, this year when the legislature adopted allocations, the allocations were more to a true amount, but then these contingency and project acceleration allocations were added that allowed for that flexibility for the department, where they would be able to tap into the contingency allocation and move that to the project that needed it, or if they needed to accelerate another project because another got delayed, they could tap into that allocation. So the vetoes of those essentially reduce the department's flexibility and how they're going to manage their capital budget going forward.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you for that excellent explanation. And that can have it could potentially have a greater impact, a negative impact on federal highway budget by not being able to move these funds as they are identified here. And this was all to get back to clarity for lawmakers to see which projects might be going over and need a little assistance, or who knows? Maybe there was a soil change and there needs to be more sub-excavation on a road project, but we would be able to see that as they had to access either one of these other two accounts. And now by not having that flexibility, I'm concerned that a project could stall and have a greater less of a benefit, as Senator Von Hemhoff so eloquently said earlier, of we're trying to grow the economy, we're trying to move Alaska forward, so I'm very concerned about that. Thank you.
Okay, we have Senator Von Hemhoff.
Okay, thank you. So I do want to talk about the tourism, because this is a big deal, the $10 million. And I know that the governor had a press conference back in April with tourist industry leaders promoting tourism and utilizing some of the COVID relief funds for advertising for tourism and marketing in Alaska. And he did that, and his departments, I think the Commerce of Economic Development, utilized some of the money, and I think it was about anywhere between 10 to 15 million. But that was all for this year. That was for the independent travelers. That was for salvaging 2021. And all of that, those monies, as far as I understand, have to be spent by December of this year. So this $10 million was for next year. This $10 million was for 2022. So right now, ATIA has nothing for 2022. And I think in the history of ATIA, I think this is the first time in its history of 25 plus years of never being funded, not a dime. And for a governor who wants to diversify revenues and promote Alaska, you know, you watched his videos this spring promoting Alaska. Oh, but only in 2021. 2022 doesn't matter. I mean, that's kind of what he's saying. So this is very worrisome.
Mr. Painter, I think this funds was created through the American Recovery Act, if I recall. Is that correct? Part of that we backed into the general funds?
Mr. Chairman, in the legislature's, in the conference committee budget, the fund source for that was the statutory budget reserve. It had been another fund source earlier on in the legislative process.
I was getting to this, the SBR. So the statutory budget reserve, so if the project was not vetoed, it would not have been funded because the SBR should be swept with the reverse sweep. And then if the reverse sweep took place, then the appropriation would be alive. So what this veto did is it killed the project, the $10 million appropriation, even if the SBR is reversed in the reverse sweep. The money would be there to pay it. And we targeted this $10 million to be initially paid for by the American Recovery Act. And then in the conference committee, we changed some of the fund sources and adjusted things because we were wanting to make all of our expenditures, including $1,100 dividend, and we had trouble getting to $1,100 because there just wasn't enough money. So without overdrawing the permanent fund. So we moved some and reclassified some funds. So unfortunately, even if the statutory budget reserve is reconstituted, as balance reconstituted with a reverse sweep, this appropriation being vetoed is dead. It takes another appropriation bill. So that's unfortunate because like I said, if it, without the reverse sweep, the money wouldn't have been there anyway, but we could have fixed the reverse sweep and freed up the money for the Alaska travel industry. It's kind of nuances of the maneuvering within the complexity of the budget this year, but it is significant. We have other questions. Senator Wilikowski, you got to have at least one question today or it's going to be a record.
All right. When a designated fund is vetoed, like the spill response fund, what happens to those funds? Do they just go back into the general fund, or where do they go?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, it depends on the fund. If it's a fund like the Spill Prevention and Response Fund, the funds would remain in that fund. It's essentially receipt authority. In some cases, the funds would lapse to the general fund if there's not a fund to catch them. So, for example, if the governor had a veto that's actually not on here because it was supplemental, but of motor DMV receipts. So in that case, since we collect in excess of what we spend and there's no fund, that just lapses to the general fund because of the veto.
We have other questions?
Mr. Chairman, I didn't actually cover the last few projects, so if I could do that really quickly.
Yeah, go ahead.
So the University of Alaska, the $10.9 million was for UAA projects. The $18.65 million was for UAF projects. Those were both general obligation bond requests. The last two for UAS were actually legislative additions that were designed to create parity between the campuses because there were projects for the other two but not UAS. And these were $2 million combined for UAS projects.
Senator Bishop.
That's correct. The bottom two projects that were legislative additions did come off the university's ranking list, so they weren't pulled out of thin air.
And those watching at home, we have numerous what we call lists, and it could be the major maintenance of the university, major maintenance of K-12, harbor matching grant funds, water sewer issues. So the agencies in charge of that particular area, whatever it is, ranks those projects as far as what they feel is the most critical need in the best interests of the state and the region. And we, as in the legislature, pull the list. We don't change the list. We just fund down the list. And it's politically fair positioning and negotiating and haggling to argue where you want to stop funding on the list and what dollar amounts, but we don't change the list. And we actually compare year to year to make sure, you know, that, that we understand the ranked order. So So I just want to reiterate what Senator Bishop said. These, you know, projects aren't just pulled from the air because a particular individual happens to sit at a finance table or is in another key political position within the legislature. We fund right down the list, and we have numerous discussions if we're going to fund 20 million or 35 or 55 million on the list. And that, those lists are available to the public on the agency's website. There's nothing secret about them. And normally the agencies come in and walk through the list with the finance committee so we can ask them why particular schools are ranked above other ones, or water and sewer, or harbors, or what have you. Just a little bit of background. We try to keep an open and transparent and fair policy and decisions here at the table. We have any final questions for the Ledge Finance Director? I'd like to thank Mr. Painter for coming forward. We'll probably have a repeat. Don't throw these slides away. We'll probably have a refresher in January because we normally tune up the legislature, the finance committee, as far as the current financial position in January and where we are with the enacted budget, and then we go on to the budget process. So with that, I'd like to thank everybody for coming. The next meeting, if we have one, will be posted. I will keep committee members informed. I'd like the committee members to have conversations, of course, with the chairmen on what they would like to see or not see coming forward. And we work as a team to try to get a balanced budget and move the state forward. We are adjourned.